Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, your morning show host, normally joined by Phil Huff, but Phil is away this week, so we'll just have to make do without him. And normally, Phil and I would chat a bit about what's going on, what's happened over the week. So, in lieu of my chatting partner, we're just going to jump into our interview today. Today, we're really lucky to be joined to hear about what's happening over on Trestle Creek. There have been updates in terms of habitat management, the road itself, and a lot going on with fires and drought this year. So, it's going to be an interesting topic. And I'm lucky to be joined by two great experts on this area. The first is Idaho Fish and Game Department mitigation staff biologist, and that is Ken Bowens. Hello, Ken.
Good morning.
Yeah, so happy to have you join us. Appreciate it. And our second guest is a guest who's joined us wearing many hats, and today's wearing his President of Trout Unlimited Panhandle Chapter President hat. It's our great friend of KRFY, Bill Love. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Julie. So good to be with you again. And I'm sorry that Phil can't join us. And Ken, good to talk with you as well.
Yes, it should be a great chat. So I'd like you to start, as we always do or often do, by telling us just a bit about yourselves. And I'd like for Ken to start. Ken, tell the listeners a bit about how you became involved in caring about fish and fisheries and fish habitat.
Yeah, I've started my career in Alaska. I was born and raised in right outside of Anchorage, and I worked kind of a 15-year career up there. I was a commercial salmon manager, a salmon research biologist, and then I finished it up there with working as a habitat biologist, working in permitting type stuff. So I kind of have a broad background. I kind of went through a mid-career crisis and decided it was time to go someplace else and do something different. So I just kind of threw my resume out everywhere and accidentally landed here, and I sure am glad that I did.
Yeah, it's about the closest thing to Alaska you can get in the US, isn't it? North Idaho.
Seems like it, yeah.
Yeah, except the days are a little longer in the wintertime.
Yeah.
It's got that going. Well, tell us about the work that you do for Idaho Fish and Game, mitigation staff biologist.
So yeah, my job as a mitigation staff biologist basically means that I implement the mitigation program, which is the Clark Fork Settlement Agreement, which is an agreement that Avista made with stakeholders to serve as part of their license to operate the Cabinet Gorge and Knox and Rapid Dams. So to offset the impacts that they have, they operate a mitigation program, and then I am in charge of running that program for the state of Idaho and the Department of Fish and Game.
That's a pretty big job because you sort of involve a lot of parties in that work, don't you?
Yeah, that's kind of the main part of the job is partnerships and working with different people and working with different stakeholders and trying to put money on the ground to do good things for fish.
Yeah, very good. What a great job. How long have you been doing that?
I've been here since 20, very end of 2013. So it's going on about 8 years almost now.
All right, so you're pretty experienced and settled into that position. Good for you. Yeah, and Bill, this is makes for a good transition to hear about you, your background, and your work with Trout Unlimited. And Trout Unlimited is one of the partners for the Clark Fork Agreement, Clark Fork Settlement.
Yes, that's right, Julie. In fact, the Panhandle chapter of Trout Unlimited is considered a signatory to the agreement, and so we were involved. I wasn't involved at the time, but chapter members were involved over 20 years ago when the agreement was put together, and that was quite an achievement for a relatively small chapter of Trout Unlimited to work with a project as large in scope, the money involved, the partners involved, and that sort of thing. And so that's been one of the hallmarks of the Panhandle chapter's involvement over the past 20 years is our work with the Clark Fork Settlement Agreement. One of the main ways that we're involved is through the bull trout education program, where we receive some money from Avista to assist Fish and Game and other partners in promoting bull trout education, primarily educating the public, both anglers and non-anglers, how to identify a bull trout, the reason that bull trout need protection and protecting the habitat for the fish and that sort of thing. So we feel that very committed in our partnership and very privileged to be alongside the many agencies and organizations that comprise the Clark Fork Settlement Agreement.
Yeah, it's a very complex mix of players, including the tribes, et cetera. Lots more. I'm sure we'll hear more about that. Bill, how did you get interested in fly fishing and Trout Unlimited? I know you've been a long-term Sandpoint resident, and I know you like to sleuth your way up the tiny creeks around town, but I also know that we won't hear about where they all are, will we?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there are definitely some secrets I need to keep. But I'm originally from Louisiana and majored in forestry in college. I knew I wanted to be a forester, but something was telling me that maybe Louisiana wasn't the preferred spot. With all of the snakes and alligators and the storms, the heat, the humidity, and everything else coming into play down there. I wanted to be a forester, but I had always eyed someplace in the Western United States and due to some experience working on staffs at the National Boy Scout Jamborees at Farragut State Park in the late 60s and early 70s, I became acquainted with North Idaho. And like everyone else, once you drive across that long bridge, then you know you found home. So anyway, I've worked as a forestry career, beginning with a U.S. Forest Service and 33 years with the Idaho Department of Lands. And now I'm doing part-time consulting forestry with Inland Forest Management in Sandpoint. But all along, I loved fishing, especially bass fishing in Louisiana. And I had done some fly fishing. And when I moved to Idaho, I figured a fly rod in a small stream was where I needed to be. And so almost 50 years later, here I am.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And your wife, we won't dwell on your wife, Marianne, but she's a lifelong resident of the area and she's kept you here too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. Very good. Well, so our topic for today is Trestle Creek. And here we are talking about the Clark Fork Agreement and Trout Unlimited. We've got to get to the topic of Trestle Creek and how do we get there? Let's ask you about that. What's going on up at Trestle Creek that involves the Clark Fork Settlement?
Yeah, so Trestle Creek is kind of one of the major players to Lake Pend'Oreille when it comes to bull trout production. So, we use red counts, which are basically we walk up the streams in the fall and we count the spawning nests that the fish make as an indicator of how many fish are there. And Trestle Creek consistently produces about, from a quarter to a third, sometimes even more than that, of all the reds, and so therefore all the fish that contribute to Lake Pend'Oreille. So it's a small stream. It's about 10 miles long, but it's a major player when it comes to growing bull trout in Pend'Oreille. So that's where why we decided to go to work there. So back, 20 years ago, it was probably a little bit more important as a stream. There were more bull trout that would go there. And kind of in the last 10 years or so, the number of bull trout that the bull trout reds have been trickling down kind of on a slow decline. So that kind of sparked my interest as far as what's going on and what's making that change. And so that's what got me started looking at that creek specifically and trying to figure out what we can do to maybe turn the needle on it a little bit.
Yeah. All right. And so what did that involve? Some research, some thinking about what you could change. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So, a few things happen. We do have ongoing research. We monitor how many juveniles live in the stream, and that's kind of our number that we collect. But beyond just data, one of the things that we've noticed that is that things are looking a little bit different in there than they did in the past. Specifically, you know, after about 2007 or so, and this 2007 flood, it seems like things were changing in the stream a little bit. And we're trying, and that kind of coincides a little bit with when the decline of abundance was happening. So the changes that we saw were that, you know, Trestle Creek is in a maturing forest, and it's a relatively stable watershed. It's got stable banks, it's got big cedars, and when you've got flooding that happens and you've got high water, it's going to erode someplace. And when you have stable banks, instead of eroding sideways, it which then would create more trees falling in the river and things like that, it seems like it's eroding downward because the banks can't erode. And so we're losing complexity, and it's kind of entrenching itself in the stream. So that was kind of the first part of what I was noticing, is and basically the gravel size in a lot of places was getting bigger. And what that means is the smaller gravels are being washed out with those floods and leaving bigger rocks behind. And that limits spawning habitat. And then beyond that, that causes the stream to entrench more, which then disconnects it from the floodplain on the sides, which then you don't have the side channel habitat. So that was kind of the first thing that I noticed as we were looking at this. And then the second thing is we had an opportunity to go look for some young of the year, you know, newly hatched bull trout. We were trying to find some specifically that life stage. They typically live in the streams for about 3 years before they go to the lake. So we could find the fish that were living in the 1 and 2 year old fish, the bigger fish, but we weren't able to find those young of the year fish in the main stem of the river. And so kind of on a whim, we decided to look up those little side channel trickles that were there. And, you know, in an inch and a half of water, that's where we were finding those newly hatched fish. And that kind of hit me that, you know, we don't have a lot of that side channel habitat, and we don't have locations for those newly hatched fish to grow in. So that became the focus of the type of restoration that we needed to do in there.
Okay, that's really interesting. And so what then developed? You came to some conclusions, and then you must have needed to do some planning and get some money, et cetera. What happened next?
So at that point, you know, we decided that, you know, trying to find some projects to bring up the bed and to create some complexity and slow the flows down, prevent the downward scouring, and try to hopefully promote a little bit of lateral scouring was what we needed to do. So as I was working on that and looking at all of this stuff, it just worked out really serendipitously. We're driving down the road one day, and at the end of the road, there's a bunch of people in orange vests and white hard hats standing around. And, you know, I've never been much on missing a meeting, so I decided to stop by and see what was going on. And it was the county meeting with Federal Highways at the time, doing a scoping meeting for a plan to repave Trestle Creek Road.
Hang on a second. I thought you were going to tell me it was the county sheriff arresting Bill again for fishing. No. Oh, that's another story. We'll get
that's another story.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. Go on. I'm causing to lose your train of thought.
No, that's fine. So they were having a meeting, and so we jumped in the truck with them and decided to go for a ride up the road, and started talking about the issues that we just talked about and talking about what the county needs to do, and thought, you know, we could put together a project that can help us both meet our needs and partner with the county and with Federal Highways and, you know, do good things for both of us and hopefully have a project that we can showcase that shows that those partnerships do work instead of, you know, the typical approach of kind of working against each other almost.
And what was the county working on? I'm assuming it was the paving project, but maybe more than that.
Yeah. So they wanted, so federal highways, it's a federal lands access program grant is what the county was applying for at the time. So federal highways is involved to provide funding and design to upgrade roads that lead to federal lands. So the Forest Service ground at the top. So they were applying for that grant. And as so part of that is they wanted to pave it and deal with some drainage issues. But to do that, they also have to protect the roadbed. And typically when they're protecting the roadbed, you know, riprap is what they do to prevent erosion. And so in our case, we wanted to work with them, try to influence some of their design to make it a little bit more fish friendly, and then show that there's work that we can do also that can help them make their road stabilization a better fit also.
Okay, and I understand Steve Klatt from the county was part of that conversation. Bill was kind enough to suggest him for our Zoom today, but he wasn't free. So we'll have to just summarize for Steve, but it sounds like they were very willing to work with you all and try and make it a great project.
Yeah, so we worked together. We put together a design from our standpoint that was funded through the settlement agreement. To move some of the areas of the creek that were directly interacting with the road, move the main flow off of the where it doesn't hit the road prism, and at the same time greatly increase the fish habitat while we were doing it. So, you know, as part of the settlement agreement, we can't just do road work. That's something that you know isn't within the scope of the agreement. But we can do, you know, we're supposed to do habitat work. And so the plan is we increase the habitat while at the same time helping the road crews out. And what we got out of the deal was an assurance from the county and from federal highways that we will be part of the design team as we move forward, so we can influence things that are beyond just what we normally just have a commenting authority on. And at the same time, they will maintain the habitat that we created when they come in and do their road work later. So it's a partnership and it's a win-win deal.
And that's really great. So in the end, you basically just messed things up a bunch. Tell us about that, how that, what it looked like, what had to happen.
Well, yeah, so complexity is the key to what we're trying to do here and to try to emulate more natural processes within the stream. So, you know, as one of the things that happens, especially in Trestle Creek is where I've noticed it, where you have large trees in a small river, is when those trees tip over, they typically just bridge up right over the cross on the banks and they don't actually get in the water and interact with the stream itself. So there are places where that does happen and it creates log jams and it creates that diversity and that complexity that we're looking for. But in a lot of cases, we didn't have that. So what we wanted to do is get large trees in the water and get them in such a manner that they're going to create roughness, which will then slow the flow down and spread that energy out and create that shallow water nearshore habitat that those young of the year fish need. So to do that, you know, when I was working on the project, I had a couple landowners that just look at it and they were shaking their heads and they were really, you know, worried about what was going on. And there was somebody thought that there was a logging operation going on and we're storing the trees in the water. And it took a little bit of discussion to let them know that, you know, what we were doing was completely on purpose and completely planned. And actually it was highly engineered to put that wood in the streams in such a way that it'll stay where we put it. Hopefully we ballast it down and then we put it in at certain angles and things that are designed to create the flow to do what we want it to do. And then when we're done with the structural parts, a lot of after that, we put a lot of branches and slash and things like that in there just to create those little nooks and crannies where fish need it. So, you know, it messy is good, and messy is what grows more fish. And so, you know, it was all on purpose, but sometimes if you just look at it, you might not know that.
Yeah, in fact, it sounds like sort of the opposite of what a person that might live along a stream or a river might be interested in seeing or having out in front of their home. It's sort of a messy, brushy quagmire of branches and brush, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, interesting. So that, when was that accomplished?
We finished up there right at the end of July, beginning of August, I think. We were able to sneak in there. The fires had already started, but we were able to get our work done before it blew up and shut the whole road system down. So we got in just in time and got out right before we wouldn't have had an opportunity to work in there otherwise. So it worked out really well.
That did. So how and when will you know if it's been successful?
So, you know, it was interesting because when we did the work, you know, immediately after we got done, we looked down and there's little fish living in the areas that we created. So they moved in there really quickly. You know, before we go to work, we used e-fishing gear, electrofishing gear, which is a way to basically stun the fish and catch them and remove them. You know, they're fine. They're alive. Once you turn the electricity off, they come back. And, so we e-fished the fish out of there so we could get the work done without having as many fish around. And then once we got done and they moved back in really quickly. And, so it seems like it's really successful, but part of that e-fishing exercise is we keep track of how many fish we move out. We measure them, we weigh them, we get the species and everything like that. So we kind of have a before number, and then we'll come back in a year or two and do those same surveys and find out what our fish abundances are afterwards.
Right. And so currently I'm based on what you said earlier, I'm guessing there weren't a huge number of bull trout, but hoping for more. Do you have some idea of what percentage were bull trout versus other species?
I don't have those numbers offhand, but there are a lot of cutthroat in the area, and you know, depending on the location, I know, you know, one of the areas that I remember talking with Drew Rance and the biologist who did the removals for me. I think it was about a third bull trout, you know, probably 35, 40 bull trout came out of that one reach, and, you know, probably twice as many cutthroat. And then, you know, those are juveniles. We do the work in late August or in July and August when the adults aren't in there so much. Part of the work timing window is to do it when they're not there, so we're not impacting them. And we wanted to get done before they showed up.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'd like to come back to Bill Love for a bit, because this seems like there's potential for some great learning opportunities. And I know that Trout Unlimited Panhandle has placed a lot of emphasis on teaching and learning about bull trout. Bill, where do you see this project fitting into the educational component of Trout Unlimited?
Well, it certainly does fit in, Julie, and kind of about the same time that Ken and the others were planning this restoration project, Fish and Game, Trout Unlimited, Avista, and other partners, at the encouragement of the Idaho Master Naturalists, who spend some time in the summers and in the fall at Lower Trestle Creek, especially on weekends when the kokanee are spawning, to deliver some public education to the many people that stop, and especially the families with small children to look at the fish spawning. And so they encouraged us to have some type of interpretive signage at that spawning side. And so that's been a project that Ken provided a lot of leadership, and the other partners were involved as well. And so earlier this year in the spring, the interpretive signs went in place. And I kind of originally thought, you know, well, we'll do it the old North Idaho gypo logger technique of kind of put a couple of cedar fence posts in the ground and a sheet of plywood and a staple gun and put some pictures of bull trout up, and we'll call it an interpretive Studies Center. But I really encourage the people to turn off of Highway 200 up to Trestle Creek Road. It's about a little over a quarter mile up, and visit that site where the signage is. I was explaining to a TU member just a couple nights ago when we had a field trip there. I said there's enough information on this sign. If you read it, study it, and then go online and take the exam, you could probably get a college credit in fish biology. That's just how informative the sign is. But seriously, though, I do encourage people to go up to Trestle Creek. Now is the ideal time. The kokanee are spawning there. And so in addition to watching the fish, you could also read the interpretive signage. And it's the road is open now following the fire closures. And then when we were there Wednesday evening, it was just so encouraging to see, about five or six different families with young children coming to visit the area. Dustin Mason, the conservation officer who specializes in bull trout, actually set up an underwater camera, and so we could see on the video screen the fish spawning, and just to watch the children come, and you know, they're so used to looking at a screen, whether it's a TV screen or a computer screen or video screen, but here they were looking at a screen and seeing kokanee spawning, and then kind of looking over the edge of the stream and seeing the very same fish. So yeah, we're very pleased to have had a small role in developing the Interpretive Center at Trestle Creek, and encourage everyone to go up and visit it.
Yeah, I think it's really worthwhile. And who knows, there may be an addition required when we learn more about the success of the strategic mess that Fish and Game created. So that may add to the story at some point, which would be very exciting.
Yeah, we certainly hope so.
Yeah. So just a couple of questions before we wrap up. And one is, will the paved road have positive, negative, or neutral effects on Trestle Creek? Ken?
Yeah, so that's one of the beauties, hopefully, of the partnership that we've formed. I think originally this project was designed as a simple road paving project. And after our involvement with it, it turned into something more than just a paving project, but it also turned into a fish habitat project and a bull trout project specifically. So, you know, one of the parts of this that our involvement is going to hopefully provide is not just that they're going to pave it, which may be a neutral or whatever, but, you know, we're going to be able to influence things like culvert locations and culvert outfalls, drainage situations, where pullouts are placed and where they're not. Another part of it that, you know, as part of our initial discussions was, you know, just removing the trees between the road and the creek, and that those trees are super important from a fishery standpoint and from the creek standpoint, and, you know, saving those trees where we can. So, you know, I think overall, I think that the paving project will reduce runoff. It will reduce some of the direct inputs into the stream that it might, you know, that it has now. And hopefully just by its design, as we work through this, it can be an overall benefit.
Yeah, cool. And then just a final question about the fires and the drought up that road and up the creek this year. I imagine there have been lots of trees that have been burned, and shade will be reduced. What do you predict to be the result of our summer of fires and drought to Trestle Creek? Bill.
Julie, when Trout Unlimited met Wednesday afternoon at Trestle Creek, Kevin Davis, a hydrology technician with the Sandpoint Ranger District, joined us, and he was the resource advisor on the Trestle Creek Complex fire, which means that from early July until currently, then he's representing the local Forest Service Ranger District on just those items that you mentioned, the concern over erosion, from the burned area and that sort of thing. And Kevin pointed out to us that the jury is certainly still out. It's going to take, you know, kind of the winter snowfall and next spring's runoff to really tell the effect of it. But he did point out to us that the most severely burned areas were higher up along the ridges. And so that whatever runoff there is going to be, it'll be filtered through, for the most part, some unburned forest area that should help filter out any sediment. And then also by the fires being the more severe burned areas being at the higher elevations, then that's a little bit above the elevation zone where we could usually expect the rain on snow flood events when you get some warm weather in the winter and a few warm days and some heavy rainfall. So anyway, as Kevin pointed out, is sort of a wait and see, but both Kevin and Sean Stash, the fish biologists with the Forest Service, are optimistic that the fish will do just fine. And they point out that the fish in these streams have evolved with fires over the centuries. So we'll just wait and see how that turns out.
Yeah, but it sounds like generally favorable. And as you say, time will tell. Well, that's good to hear. And maybe a good way to bring our interview to an end on a positive note. So unless I've missed anything big, Ken or Bill, is there anything we need to add, or shall we go ahead and wrap it up?
Well, I want to know where Bill's going to go fishing this weekend.
Yeah, and I want to hear about his little, he's got a story he needs to share with us too. We've got about a minute we can spend on that, Bill. You'll have to make it very quick.
Okay, I'll be very brief, and there's two stories, so please listen to both of them. The story I like to tell is I was going to my favorite fishing hole in Trestle Creek late July, early August, and I wasn't paying attention, and I walked down to the stream with my fly rod. I happened to turn around, and all of a sudden here were these game wardens. There were fish biologists, there were county people, they all swarmed around me. One of the conservation officer kind of cited me for fishing in a closed stream. I convinced the judge that I, rather than paying the fine and losing my license, I'll do community service by cleaning up the litter along a stream or two. And Julie, you've agreed to help me do that. So I appreciate that.
But all right. Sounds like you wiggled your way out of that one, Bill. What's the next one?
Yeah. Well, okay. The next story is that Ken had told me that they were finishing the project and said, if you're in the area, stop by. And I happened to drive up that afternoon. They weren't looking where I parked and did not see me. And so I grabbed my fly rod. It's a Ride and McGill Eagle Claw featherweight. It doesn't even have a reel on it. But I walked down to the stream with my back to the group and kind of, you know, said, here's my fishing hole right here. And then all of a sudden that caught their attention. So in all seriousness, and please believe me, Julie, this was kind of an intended prank, a joke that I played on myself.
Sure. Swarmed by state professionals again. Well, it sounds like you lucked out both times, Bill Love, but good on you.
Yeah. All right. Scouts honor, Julie. That's a true story.
Okay. Well, if you say it, I believe it. But with that, I'm going to conclude this really interesting interview, and I'd like to thank you both. I'd like to thank you, Ken Bowens, mitigation staff biologist for Idaho Department of Fish and Game, for telling us about the strategic mess you've created on Trestle Creek. And Bill Love, I'd like to thank you for joining us again to let us know how Trout Unlimited remains involved with conservation and education in regards to bull trout and fishing and the environment in general here in our panhandle. So thank you both for joining us, and I hope we'll talk to you again soon.
You're very welcome.
Okay, I've stopped the... Wait a second. There. Wait a minute.